Viewers, listeners, welcome to another edition of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is an actor and a voice artist. She's also a graduate from the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire. I love that word. I've been practicing that all weekend. I love that word. She's also a pianist. She's a gifted singer, and her voice has been described as cool and current and husky. She's also, which is fitting for Blighty Talks Bricks, a first-time buyer, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation we're going to have about her experiences being a first-time buyer. This is the first time we've had a first-time buyer on, so we've been at one end of the market with chairmen and leaders of big house-building businesses, a mix and smattering of celebrities, which we've got today as well, and also a first-time buyer. So I'm super excited. Daisy May Parsons, welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks. How are you?
Honestly, honoured, thrilled to be here. Big names before me, so.
Well, you're the new upcoming big name.
There we go.
So I'm looking to be your support artist as we move further forward.
Stunning.
So before we get on the serious stuff, I know you love your cricket.
Obsessed, yeah.
How and why?
So my grandfather was, Papa, as we called him, was a cricket nut, and I would just, every weekend when I went to go and see them, he had Test Match Special on. He played for Kent back in the day.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he was a very smart boy, but loved his sport and was always seen as the naughty one playing sport. And I always followed it. And then I guess I kind of lost my way with it a bit. Rugby became very cool. Donnie Wilkinson became very sexy.
Is this a looks thing that we're going for?
Well, here? When I was a teenager, yeah. Okay. Obviously, Donnie Wilkinson was the pin-up. And then it was the 2019 year with the World Cup and the Ashes that kind of really brought me back into it again. I always watched it and enjoyed it. But after that, I know the players. I know I'm like obsessed. Go to all the podcast talks and things. So yeah, but I feel very special. It's a special sport because my granddad loved it. So.
And have you ever thought about playing it?
Every year I say I will. And then I never.
Because the women's game is really
it's
growing.
Only up. Yeah, yeah.
It really is
the
growing.
The hundreds made it. Brilliant. I mean, I'm a very good spectator.
Me too.
I love a day at Lord's at the Oval, always with a pint in hand, chanting away. I was sporty. I was good at sport. I think I would have been a decent player had I started younger.
And what position would you have taken? Would you have been an all-rounder?
I like to think, an all-rounder. But I did hockey and rounders at school, and I was in the rounders team, so I can catch and I can throw and I can hit. So
that
yeah,
makes you a cricketer.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But I like you. This is a terrible thing to admit. I've been to Lord's on the first day. I used to go every year, and there's been on occasions that I've not seen a ball bowled, and that's not been because of the weather.
You were in the Harris Garden with drinking Pims.
You must have seen me.
I would have been there, but my vision's also gone, yes.
It's a lovely day out.
It is, and then you get the anxiety because you get to sort of after lunch and you think, oh, bugger, I've not seen any cricket, and yeah.
Well, I got home once and my dear old dad, bless him, said it was when Michael Avertin got caught for supposedly tampering with the ball. He said to me, what do you think? And I didn't even know who was batting. How bad it was. So there we go. We'll move swiftly away
swiftly
from that.
Swiftly away
site.
From that, yeah.
Actor. How? Why?
God, I think it's just always been. I could never, from a really young age, it was the only thing that I wanted to do. And still now, it's the only thing I want to do. And I think when that stops being it, then you know your time has come with it because you have to love it.
It's a tough business, tough job.
And just when you think you've got the thick skin and you've nailed it, you'll get a no from a very irrelevant, or not irrelevant, but like a small gig, and it will really knock you. So I think, yeah, I was, from a young age, I was musical, I could sing. My family were like, oh my God, where's that voice come from? Because everyone else, bless them.
A bit like me, they can't sing.
Yeah, they enjoy it, but they can't sing. My grandmother was a lovely singer on my dad's side. But from a young age, I got a karaoke machine and just was singing Kylie Minogue, I Should Be So Lucky. Was that Madonna? Which one?
No, that's Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, Kylie Minogue. Yeah.
You're testing me now.
Yeah.
That's Kylie Minogue.
And I remember sort of being 8 or 9 and my parents being hammered at Christmas and making me sing Kylie Minogue on repeat for the family. So it was always been, and I just knew it's what I wanted to do. So then I went to uni, and I was a bit too scared to go to drama school because I was a sports player. So everyone was like, you're going to go and do sport. And I was like, yeah, I like it, but I want to do Shakespeare. I want to be on stage. But my school was great. I was very lucky, but you were a bit pigeonholed. And I was a hockey girl, and that was my thing. So I went to uni, had a gap year, went to uni, did 3 years of theatre and performance, but it was a bit of a wish-wash thing, and then thought, right, I'm actually going to give it a crack. I'm going to try drama school. And my parents said, you've got 1 year to get in, and if you don't get in, you're 22 now. And I got in. So I went to Birmingham.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple of things you say there that I just want to pick up on. One, you said that you was a little bit scared to go to the drama. Yeah, you're scared, but your confidence is in your voice. Your confidence is you can play the piano. You're a performer, yet you want to be up on stage. Yet you were scared to go to drama school.
Yeah.
And that's that. I've heard that from other people, funny enough.
I think it's because people have an idea of you, and then there's also something a bit cringy about. An element of acting is a stupid thing, isn't it? And it is a very self-indulgent thing. So I think when people admit they want to go into a very self-indulgent, vain profession, which it isn't always, but it's
an entertainment.
Way.
I mean, we watch things at theatre, film, TV. We go to shows because we want to be entertained, don't we?
And I think there was a concern. People were like, oh, she just wants to be famous, which I genuinely couldn't imagine anything worse.
Than being famous.
Well, just imagine being hungover and trying to go and get a pint of milk. I mean, it would just be a nightmare.
I've been unhungover and I've gone to get a pint of milk a few times, but not
famous.
Imagine
people being like, is that?
You look rough.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's that. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Or if they saw you the night before.
God, yeah. Cross-eyed and dribbling or whatever. You know, like, it would just be awful.
You said you wouldn't mention you saw me like that last week.
Yeah, sorry.
And it is strange, isn't it? Because you're saying, I don't want to go to drama school.
Mm.
Yeah, I really want to act.
Yeah.
I really want to be out there.
Yeah, and I didn't know how to do it. You don't have to go to drama school, but it's a very certain way to get your foot in the right direction.
Yeah.
But again, it's sort of, unless you start super young, you don't really know. I imagine it's much like buying a flat. You just don't know how to start. You just don't know what to do. And it's quite terrifying.
We'll certainly come on to talking about flats. One of the things I just want to mention there, and you just said it, you develop a thick skin, but you get a knockback.
Mm.
I would imagine in your profession, you get more knockbacks than most people get in everyday life.
Yeah.
How do you keep your spirits up? You're young.
Mm.
How do you keep your confidence and your spirits up?
Oh, I think you just have to tell yourself it's not about you. So lots of the acting world, they will know what they want.
Yep.
But when they invite you to audition, they have a big pool of maybe we'll see what, they've got an idea for a part and she might be tall, brunette, curvy. But they think, let's just try what that looks like. And it's not going to work out, but you think, and you read really nicely and you think it went really well. You get recalled. And then right down to the wire, no. And you think, and for the first few years thinking, what did I do wrong? What was it that I did wrong? There must be something that I did. And I just learned that. And so much of life is this way as well. It's just not about you. It's about the circumstance and whether you fit into that.
Absolutely.
And that, I think you learn that the older you get, it's not always about you.
And they might have changed the view on what they were going to, and I've often heard that when, people talk about blockbuster films and stuff like that, the person that ended up in the role.
Yeah.
Wasn't actually in the mix
yet. You
always
see, they wanted X to be it, but it ended up being Y. You think, my God, I wouldn't have. Yeah, so it's not personal. You just have to be a bit like, okay, on to the next.
So you keep your confidence off by sort of effectively going, it's not my fault, it's not down to me, it's not to my ability.
Nothing to do with me.
I get that. But is that, that works? Are there times when you think you go, I can't do this anymore.
You just think, I have had a few auditions where I've been so in over my head. I remember I had an audition to go, it was Mamma Mia, but the cruise version. So they basically lift it off the West End, put it on a massive cruise ship, and you tour it around for 6 months. So people who perform in those shows are West End actors.
Who want that experience, first of all. Or maybe in between a part, and that comes up.
Exactly. but they are people who are trained in musical theatre. Because I sing, and I do, but I'm not a trained musical theatre performer. So I turned up to this audition with these girls who just, I mean, they were doing the splits to warm up. I was thinking, oh my God. And I could hear in the room in the back, and I was auditioning for the part of Donna, which is the mum. So I had to make myself look older anyway. And the music already is quite, they're quite particular about it. They've literally taken note from note ABBA and put it on the sheet. So you have to learn it note for note. I could hear in the room, they were singing Celine Dion, Ragdoll. You know, right. That massive, yeah. Which is that song, like, you don't fuck around with that song. Do you know what, yeah, I mean? Like,
it's got to be done properly.
Big song. I hadn't seen that on the call sheet, on my packet that I got. So I'd learnt ABBA, The Winner Takes It All. I'm like, right, days, mate. And you guys thinking, oh my God, they're going to ask me to sing this massive. And I thought, I honestly was like, I almost turned around and walked out. I was so terrified because I wasn't prepared. And you feel really in over your head. And I got in there, and actually, I was very lucky. They didn't ask me to sing it. I think it was just chance. So there are times when you think, that wasn't for me, but also I wasn't good enough and I wasn't ready, and that was not for me. So I think it's just also working out. When you're younger, you say yes to every audition. The older you get, I'm like, I'm just not good enough in those areas for that work, and that's fine. It's just knowing what's for you.
You're obviously super talented.
Thank you.
What's your favourite discipline? Because we're talking about singing, we're talking about acting. You've mentioned Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favourite discipline? If there was one thing that you say, do you know what, it voiceovers, what's the one that you really like the best, where you fulfil what you want?
It's definitely stage. Stage is the feeling you can't get from anywhere else. I think most actors will say that as well. But stage is such a difficult thing because, I mean, the pay isn't great. The hours you put in.
Long.
And if you're living in London paying rent, it's hard to find a job that's going to cover your rent and cover your bills, and then you have anything left to have a life. But if I could do one thing forever, it would be stage. And I do love Shakespeare, but Shakespeare is really hard to do well. And you have to practice and practice all the time.
One of the things when I've been to shows, and I've probably done all of the shows in the West End, one of the things that I wonder, I mean, you mentioned about is hard work.
Mm-hmm.
The hours are long.
Yep.
You probably don't have much of a social life.
No.
I always wonder whether they get bored, because if you're playing the same part day in, effectively day in, day out, sometimes twice a day.
Yeah, I think people don't, because they know it's normally a 6-month contract, and then you can spend a year unemployed. So there's no
guarantee.
You've
got to be at your best, and there might be somebody in the audience that's talent spot.
There's no guarantee that you'll get more work after this. And that's where it comes in with, you have to love it more than anything else. You have to love it more than going to the pub and having a pint, because you can't turn up to a matinee hungover, you know, feeling rough. Because those people that you just can't, it has to be the thing you love most. And it is a big sacrifice. I mean, I managed to juggle the drinking and acting just fine. But I've had years of practice. So, but if you're a stage performer on the West End, you just have to put it first. It just has to be. And it might be 6 months, right? And then I'll take 4 months off, because you can do that, but it needs to be the thing.
So you like stage the best.
Mm-hmm.
Can you then specifically go to agencies and say, right, you're the cream of this, I don't know, this the stage world, I want to be. Is that the way you go about that?
Yeah, so there are agencies that will do straight musical theatre, or just theatre, or film and TV, but there are hundreds. I mean, there are the top 10, which are big, mainly in Soho. But you have lots of independent, smaller ones popping up. But yeah, they will specify what they do, but there will be one. Yeah, there are some that are musical theatre, some that are film, some that are stage. And then you have the separate voiceover agencies. Some do both, but generally they're separate.
And when you go for an audition, do you get nervous?
Yeah, if you want it. But I think that's a good thing.
So you're obviously really nervous today.
Yeah, terrified. No, if you want it, I think if you care, you're going to be. It's like if you're going for a meeting or a pitching or something. Like you're going to be nervous because you care. If you're not nervous, I mean, you can be confident. I know that I can do a good job. I know that I can deliver here. But there is a chance that my nerves kick in and my voice cracks, or, you know, your improv isn't quite. So you're nervous about that, but Yeah, but if you're not, you don't care enough.
No, and it's interesting. I've had, you know, talked to sportsmen, cricketers, golfers, anyone really that plays professional sport about how they control their nerves.
It's amazing, isn't it? You know, they can slow their heart rate down. You heard this?
Yeah, well, I'd see a lot of golfers walk around when they've got a sort of strap on their arm there to record their, and then they take that data back and stick it up against the good and bad shots to see where they're...
It's mad, isn't it? And how they can, cricketers, when they're being bowled at, they can, like, slow down how the ball, like, their brain can slow down the ball coming to them. It's mental, like, by bringing their heart rate down.
Especially when they're in the heat of battle. Yeah. When it's you know, especially if it's a quick game.
You've got Mark Wood coming at you, 98 miles an hour.
You are a stat, aren't you? You do know the facts and figures.
Yeah,
have you had some funny situations when you've gone to an audition and it's all gone rat shit?
Yes. Yeah. I had one where, I remember it so clearly, I turned up, and just knew straight away the cast director didn't like me. He just didn't like me. I knew it. I could just tell.
How did you know? I like you, by the way. How did you know?
I just knew. He was giving me the wrong kind of eye contact. Not like, he wasn't engaging with me, but he was kind of looking at me a bit like, he was pulling people up to different scenes together, and he wasn't really pulling me up. And then he pulled me up for a scene that I was just like, well, that can't, that's a bit of a nothing scene. And I knew he wasn't going to recall me. It wasn't on my best form. And I think it's because I knew he didn't like me. So I got in my head a bit. I freaked out. I froze. I was like, fine, I'll never see him again. Next week, went to a different audition. And he was sat on that panel as well. And I was like, oh my God. And I didn't get that one either. And I then, because I think I got in my head again.
Did you go through it with him? You didn't just go, do you know what, mate? I know you don't like me. I'm out of here.
This was about 7 years ago. So I was, now me, I'd be like, right, you're going to listen to me and you're going to give me my 5 minutes. But younger Daisy was like, oh, I'm just so pleased to have the chance. Whereas now I think there is a power to walking in that room. And I think as well, the older you get with it, you realise you need me here as much as I need you. You need actors coming in. So you respect the time that I give you and I'll respect you back. But I think when you're younger, you think, oh, I'm just so grateful to be here. But they need us as well. So that's what you learn as you get older as well, just to be like, I'm going to control this space, take my time. You've asked me to be here, so I'm going to be here and you'll listen to me.
What would you say is the best or the most enjoyable part you've had in your acting career? What bit do you immediately go, do you know what? I loved that.
There was a trilogy of audiobooks that I did, and this was one of the first voice jobs I did. And the book is by an author called Sam Sykes, and it's a trilogy. It's like fantasy. I say it's like Game of Thrones meets Kill Bill. So it's quite sexy, but it's like magic and things. And I wasn't sure I was going to like audiobooks. I wasn't really, hadn't done one before. And it became really popular, big in America. And I was brought back for all three books. And I got so invested in her story as the main character. I was doing all the voices. And I was so proud of it. And it was so, these books were about 12,000 pages altogether or something. It was more than 50. And it was so much work. And I nailed it. I completely nailed it. So
you knew you'd nailed it?
I knew I'd nailed it. The first book, not so much. So I was nervous and had a bit of a dodgy studio it was one guy who he hated his job. The poor guy, he was like, I'm quitting after this. I was like, cool.
Yeah, great.
My first
Thanks
time
very
doing
much.
Audiobook. This is a great experience for me. And he was just like, I hate it here. We're going to close down. I was like, great. So I think, and I remember sitting in that booth thinking, okay, look, he gave me 4 days to do an audiobook, my first ever book, and it was
4 days. How many?
8,000 pages. And so I was,
8,000
so the first
pages.
Book, if you listen, you can hear that I'm kind of rushing to get through it. So then they changed the studio because obviously he went, packed his bags and went. And I was like, great. And the second studio.
Guys, none of you are going today, by the way. This is not your last day.
And the second studio was a lovely in King's Cross. 2020 Studios, and they had a whole team around me. They had a producer, Darlin, from Somerset, and he taught me so much, and we nailed that second and third book, and the reviews were amazing. So I think that was a good curve, because I was like, oh, I've screwed this up here. They're not going to get me back for the second and third. And they did, and people, I still get love on, I've got some fans on Twitter. They liked
me. I'm a fan.
You're a fan, there you go.
I'm a fan.
People send me kind of like, they do cartoon drawings of Sal, the character, and they send them to me on Twitter. So I have my own little fans, which is great. So that I'm really proud of, because it's not everyone's cup of tea. It's like sci-fi. So my mother hasn't listened to it, but that's fine. I did do a rom-com, and she didn't listen to that either, so I am taking it personally.
Mum wants you to sing, by the way. She phoned me and told me.
She's normally on
Kylie Minogue.
Kylie Minogue, yeah. But no, so that one I would be really proud of. And I think it got put forward for a few nominations things. So yeah, I was really pleased with that one.
And on the voiceovers, do you always this husky voice?
For corporate stuff, I do, yeah.
So do you move your voice around a bit?
Yeah, so it depends. When you're doing the character work on the audiobooks, you go through it before with your team and you pick out the voices and you record snippets. But if I'm doing corporate, generally they want me for the M&S knockoff, you know, that kind right. of Audi sort of thing. But then some stuff is very much, it just depends what they're looking for. But yeah, I do.
You move your voice around. You're not doing child type voices, that kind of situation.
Sometimes if you're doing a cartoon or something or like a podcast sort of short story thing. But generally my bread and butter is I do a lot of corporates, especially this time of year.
Right.
And they just want...
Is there anything you can tell us about they're doing? Bearing in mind this is not going to come out for a few weeks.
Just done Unilever's new campaign. That was nice. And I just did...
Did you just go into voice then when you said that?
Did you hear it changed a bit. Yeah, Unilever. And then Sky Crime. That was a nice one. But I'm also doing another audiobook at the moment, but it's I didn't really realise when I took it on. It's called My Pirate at Midnight, and it's a bit porny. I didn't realise
it's a bit what?
Porny.
I've never heard that word before.
You're not porny.
I like it. Can I nick it?
Of course you can.
Oh, I love that
word. It's a
bit
porny. I didn't realise. I did my audition, sent off, and then I started reading the book. I was thinking, oh.
It's getting a bit fruity.
Cleavage just being mentioned and things. And she's a virgin, obviously. And she finds a pirate and they sail off and find some treasure. I'm thinking, I'm not sure this is going to go on my CV, but I
you just hope you just hope your mum doesn't listen to this one.
Yeah, I won't tell her, yeah. It's sort of a bit like, oh, she stares into his like lustful eyes with her bosom heaving. It's like, oh, for God's sake.
I'm quite liking this.
Yeah, my pirate at midnight. I played the sample to my flatmates. They were like, oh, my God. So when it's done, I'll send you a copy.
Send me a copy. I'm looking forward to it. Moving on to the serious side in terms of property, everything we've just talked about there mm-hmm. is serious. You're in the market.
I am.
You're looking to buy.
I'm looking to buy.
How's that journey been for you?
Humbling, very humbling, because I'm self-employed and yep. I'm a single individual, so it's my income only.
With this pawn book, you might not be for long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that, don't you?
My journey started, I think, last summer. I thought, right, I'm going to try. Before that, about 2 years ago, I thought, I'm going to try and buy something up north and let it out.
Okay.
And my father, for his own reasons, is very anti-buy-to-let. He just thinks, as a first-time buyer,
I get that.
Yeah, I do. And if I had a bigger pot, I guess it would...
Deposit money,
yeah.
Generally?
So I looked at sort of buying something in Leeds for like 100k and letting it out. But we kind of went off that idea. And then last summer, I thought, right, deposit's got a bit bigger. I looked and I found a shared ownership flat in Willesden Green. So, well, you know, that's, I can get, it's quite nice and it's 60% and la la. But that estate agent, they're not all arseholes. But
don't worry, in fact, I started life in business as an estate agent. And can I be in the one, then they're not all?
Of course,
thank
you're
you.
Not.
Thank you.
You're
I'm not an estate agent now, by the way.
But I also think they see a blonde single girl, you know, coming up to the fact that here we go. She's got no idea. And they can kind of, you can tell when they're trying to jeep you a little bit.
Yep.
There's lots of other offers. You've got to put an offer in. Everyone's interested. It's going to go tomorrow, that sort of stuff. And they just, you feel a bit like, oh, shut up. So I found this shared ownership flat, and he was just so patronising and so rude, and it really
pissed you off.
Pissed me off, yeah.
I get that.
And I was a bit salty with him. And then I put an offer, and he sort of was so condescending. You were just so far off the mark. Bugger off. I did tell him, I think on the phone, I said, oh, shut up, Paul. And my I shouldn't say his name.
No, don't. Sorry. That's right. You didn't tell me his surname, did you? No.
We actually named him, me and my mortgage guy called him Paul the Prick for a while. So that was that was really
professional. PP.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, God, what, you know, anyway. So I blocked him. And then he found...
What do you mean you blocked him?
Well, you know...
You're not supposed to sort of just be in touch every day.
I'm very used to blocking men, you know. Right, okay. One chance. You know,
I'm feeling sort of insecure
now. You're very safe.
Okay, you know, that's good.
We're in safe. Cool. But, yeah, with dating or with agents, one shot, and then if you piss me off, you're gone. So I blocked him. And then he called me off a different number. And I was like, who's this? Like,
was he trying to chat you up, though?
No, I sincerely hope not.
No, but he might have been.
Maybe, maybe, because he called me Saturday and it's Paul. Saying, oh God, I went, who? He went, it's Paul. And I went, Paul, that. Oh.
Paul,
and
yeah,
I
Paul.
Almost said it.
Oh, hello, PP, how are you?
Because I've got something new for you in case you're interested. I said, with you? No. And then he goes, why? I said, well, you're just a bit of an arsehole last time, Paul, to be honest. He goes, was I? And I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, please, some feedback. I said, no feedback needed. You know what you did. You were really condescending. I said, I'm not interested. Thank you so much. And he said, kept sending me things through. I was like, bugger off.
So the experience has not been great. Is it improved since?
Yes, it has improved since. And actually, I found a really lovely estate agent. He was a young girl. First time buyer herself, you got it. I mean, she had a partner she was looking to buy with, but she got it. She's like, I know. And estate agents have this really stunning habit of you call them, you don't get through, leave a voicemail. They send you a message back saying, oh, we know you want to buy. A quick questionnaire before we start, and you get a 4-page document asking where you were born and your height and your weight. And every single person, I think, why do you need to know?
I thought that was a dating agency that did that.
I'm like, why do you need to know? Just, I want to see the flat. Show me the flat. And then they'll call you, and it's like 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, and obviously you're working, and they'll call you again. They will continue to call you, thinking, I'm not answering because I'm busy. Why are you still calling me? So, you know, send a voicemail, and then you'll try and call them back, and they won't answer. I think, oh my God, it's my mother. It's the same thing as, you know, when you call your mother, don't, so you just
this
calling
is, this
me.
Is a therapy session
this
here.
This is, it's
and you're getting a
now.
Lot of things off getting, your chest yes. here. This is good.
Yeah, but I found one Casey, and we're on first-term basis now, and she's lovely. But I saw one a couple of weeks ago, and it was grim. One bed, Victorian conversion. It was in probate for 2 years. Heavy smokers, stank. It was disgusting. And it was on for 300. So I was like, okay, that's fine, but it's a shithole. Like, it's this needs to be gutted. Yeah. And 300 is my top end from what I could comfortably do or could do, but I can't afford all the work as well.
Yeah.
And they weren't accepting offers below. So I was just thinking, this could be a beauty. It was a garden flat, and it could be lovely, but I was thinking, you don't get to put it on the market value for what it could be. It is what it is now, and it needed new electrics, new piping. We had to wear masks. It smelled so bad.
Okay.
So sometimes you feel a bit like, I know it could be great, but it's not great yet. And that shouldn't reflect in the price now.
So,
you know?
I'm in the industry.
Yeah.
Hopefully I haven't been PP.
Never, no.
I'm talking to you as a first-time buyer.
Yeah.
Do we estate agents, house builders, do we put enough, we think we do, do we put enough importance to how we deal with, you're a perfect example, first time buyer. I mean, it's interesting, I looked at the weekend, just some stats that we have roughly around 870,000 would-be first time buyers.
Right.
The average age is 34. Mm-hmm. The average deposit is £53,000 if you go the average up and down the country.
Yeah.
65% of those are male that are looking.
Right.
And 28% are looking for flats or apartments.
Yeah.
Now, I've been in the industry for 40 years. I've looked these figures up. I'm sure somebody is going to look at my figures and say that's wrong, they're not my figures. But do we look after first-time buyers as well as we should? Do we have enough information out there? When you sat down, you said, I don't know lots of stuff, but you're looking. Do we give enough information out to first-time buyers?
I don't think
Take your experiences alone.
I don't think so. I think everything that I've learned has been through my, my parents telling me from when they bought, or friends who have bought, but I feel like it's such a huge thing to buy a flat, because this is essentially all the money I have in the world will be going into this.
Absolutely. Well, we had one of our house builder clients came on, and he basically said, if you think about it, we're taking all your money.
Literally, everything I have.
And you've still got to pay monthly as well.
Yes, pay monthly, and there's work to do, and you think you need cash. So I just, it's such a big thing. So I think what could be better is putting first-time buyers at ease, maybe making it more simple, because people throw out words at you, and you're like, okay, yeah. You've got no idea what they're talking about, but you don't want to look like an idiot. So I'm like, yeah, I understand. So, and it's sort of things like that. So I think sometimes there's a presumption that you know everything. And while I can do research and know certain things like service charge or ground rent or whatever, you understand all of that stuff. But there's so much that goes into property. It's actually quite complicated.
And it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrifying. And you just think...
It's scary when you get older. It doesn't go away.
Really?
Well, because... Generally speaking, for most of us rank and file that are in a position to buy, and there's lots of people that are not, it's the biggest thing, that biggest one financial commitment we will make. And you're going into an area that's a strange area in lots of cases.
It's just so, it's so grown up, and I'm just, I'm not, which is the problem.
I'm not grown up either.
No, but you...
I mean, a young man in an old man's body.
Yes, well, this is, yes, and I don't always make excellent life choices. So when it comes to buying a flat, I just think I'm not equipped to make this adult choice, even though I know I am. But am I? You know, it's scary.
So who put you... do you have a lawyer that will act for you when you find a property?
No. Don't even... I do need... Yes.
You do?
I do need one, yeah.
But so you need one, but you haven't got one?
No,
right.
Not yet.
Okay, and what I find interesting talking to you is that
honestly, what am I even doing?
No, but this because you won't be alone in this conversation. Yeah. I'm telling you, what I find interesting is that you're looking at an estate agent.
Yes,
you're looking at one, but you're not looking at an area. For example, I mean, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. I'm not a Rightmove fan.
Are you not?
No.
My dad's friend from school was the original. He was the first.
Was he? He must have done.
He's very rich now.
He must have done very well, because what they charge and what they provide are miles apart, in my view, in what services. He's not so what?
He's not married. But could I date my dad's school friend?
Did you?
Not yet.
It's
a life goal.
Okay, we might edit that bit.
He's quite sexy.
Is it? Well, yeah, yeah. Okay, right, okay. Well, we might edit this bit.
I won't name him.
No, don't name him. No, I'm sure you're going to have... everyone's going to be going, oh, hello. He's going to get loads of calls.
I think he's got a girlfriend, unfortunately.
But... Well, he did have. She might be going, especially if he reads that book that you're doing.
Yeah.
So
I'll send him a copy.
Send him one before you send it to me. Yeah. See how you get on. But it's interesting, isn't it? You've said some things there that... I've taken lots of things for granted and still do. I'm learning, you know, this podcast is about the property world, the housing crisis. You're a first-time buyer, and you've told me some things that I've taken for granted.
Really?
I have taken them for granted. I just assumed that, I mean, I don't think that the buying public are as well informed, but I certainly thought there was a bit more out there for first-time buyers in some ways. You can ask me anything. I probably won't know the answer, but
go. Your first property you bought.
Yep.
How old were you and how much did you pay for it? If you don't mind.
No, I can tell you that. So the first property I bought with a friend. At that time, the pandemic at the time that was the scary one, funny enough, we mentioned it in the car coming down to the studio today, was AIDS. Oh. And I bought with a friend a one-bed flat that he was going to live in. I'll get in trouble now. I wasn't going to live it, but we both had to have an AIDS test.
Did you?
Because it was a one-bed flat.
Together.
We paid £39,000 for it, and it would have been
that
in
makes
the.
Me so
it would have been in. Well, that but you say that at the time.
Yes.
You know, my parents were living in a house. My dad took his first mortgage late in life when he was early 50s. He paid £14,000 probably 10 years before, but got a three-bedroom terraced house. Mm. We were buying a one-bed flat, and that old saying, you couldn't swing a cat round it.
Yeah.
Today, I don't know, what would that be worth? 200. But I mean, this was donkeys years ago.
Yes.
I mean, it's still a good investment. Property's yes. still, in the UK, we have a very different take on life to the Europeans when it comes to property.
Yes. Yeah,
but
yeah.
equally, the rental market's a disaster, isn't it?
Disaster. Yeah. I mean, my flat I live in with three other girls, and when I moved in 2020, it was 6 months and then a rolling contract, which I thought was great because I was like, well, it gives me freedom. I can come and go if I want to get out of it easily, that's fine. But it also gives you hardly any protection because your landlord can just... I mean, there are laws in place. I think you can only increase it once a year, but she's not really one. She's just sort of makes things up, I think. So we've had a lot of rent increases and our flat needs a lot of work and just doesn't get done. You're just not protected.
Yeah.
But it's a nightmare. Yeah. We're lucky. It's a nice flat and we kind of make it nice, but it's not by any stretch of imagination as bad as it can be. But she makes a lot of money out of us.
So after this podcast is finished, we'll do it now. I think what you should be doing is to say, right, I want to be in an area.
Yeah, okay.
You're self-employed, so you've got a mortgage consultant and you spoke nicely of him, a mortgage advisor.
Yes. Yeah.
So you've got an idea what you can and can't afford.
Yes.
He's giving you the information to help
yes.
you him be able to come up with an agreed situation there. You've got your location.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all of the property portals, Zoopla, Rightmove, on the market, they're all worth looking at.
Why don't you like Rightmove? Or Zoopla or just
no,
that?
No, 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 no. I'll tell you why, because I get it. They have cornered the market, but that's the fault of the developers and the agents that have not used the opposition. If you only go to one restaurant and you don't go to the other two,
yes.
the likelihood is that restaurant's going to put their prices up, the service will drift, and you don't use the other two to compare. So that's my first critic of it. I don't think their service is great. I've got people in my business that will back me up on that. But they have cornered the market.
Yeah.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
But I'm not the only one in the industry that's going, no, you can't keep putting the prices up. Especially when we're not selling anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you're providing a service, you put your price up if you're getting value out of it. When you're in a market that's not, I don't think they've got any understanding of how difficult life is.
No.
So that's my reason for them. But I think if you've done the hard bit, self-employed mortgages are the toughest thing in the market.
I want to just give me more. I'll pay it back, I promise.
And it was also, we had help to buy, and that was the shared ownership and stuff like that. Maybe that's worth investigating. Don't pin your hopes on one estate agent.
Okay, yeah. I like to make friendships.
No, and I get
or
that.
Or enemies, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wasn't. He is now.
Yeah, he is now, yeah.
But I think it's to, you know, you're out in the market, that particular estate agent sounds as though that lady's lovely.
Yes.
But they might not have all of the properties come on the market.
Yeah.
Look at your house builders.
Okay.
Look at your housing associations.
Yes, okay.
Your lawyer to your solicitor that's going to act for you on your purchase, the agent will probably have a friendly lawyer that they use, which will help. You don't get it any cheaper, you don't pay any more for it.
Fine.
But they are going to have that relationship where they can make that call to make that process, which is, as we know, it's tough. It's emotionally tough.
I think there's so many things. You don't think about the extra cost of the lawyer. So when you put your money down, you're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, actually, I need this, this, this. And that's, I think, what's scary.
Absolutely. It takes it all out of that cash. Yeah. You're going to take this
big
deposit.
My deposit's gone from this to this.
Yeah.
And I went up. Which is always a lovely thing as a self-employed person, but I went up a tax bracket. So this last year, I had to pay tax for this year as a year earlier.
Yeah.
Which I, like a true independent woman, called my father crying. I was like, Daddy.
And did he help?
Well, it was more that they were threatening to, I don't know what, she was really mean on the phone because I didn't understand, it was my fault, I didn't understand.
They're mean to me as well, so don't worry about it.
I didn't understand, and I'd never had to pay in advance before, so I was just sort of like, I called up expecting them to be like, oh no, you're right, we're wrong. She was like, you owe us a lot of money. She's Australian. And I was like,
Is that a voiceover?
Yeah, there we go. And I was like, she goes, you got to pay by the end of today or they're going to send bailiffs around. And I was like, I was like, what? I was like, do I just pretend the phone goes dead? I was like, I'm just going to exit the country. And I had money in an account, but it wasn't in London. It was like a building society outside. So I couldn't get to it. I hadn't set up online banking of that.
You sure this was a tax man? You sure you weren't being squeezed by
well,
somebody?
That's why I was thinking, oh my God. Anyway, called my dad and I was like, look, I've got to take this, it was a deal by the end of the day, a deal. I was paying a certain amount, but then I was thinking, oh shit. I was like, really, I've balls this up. And then I called my dad and I was like, look, I can't get the money in that account because it takes 48 hours to get out of that dinosaur bank account into my modern one. And that actually, I got quite emotional, being a classic dramatic thespian, that I was lucky enough to have a father who could lend me. It wasn't that much, but people don't have that. Do you know what I mean? I'm very lucky that I have a father who could be like, there you go, there's 1,800 just to get you through to the end, to take the deal. And then I just did it. But I sobbed like a big girl. Sobbed.
It's nothing when we're crying.
It's just scary. Again, it's like the property thing. It's scary. Tax is scary.
But all of these things are part of the process of growing up. And as you get older and you get more experience, it doesn't get any easier.
Does it not?
No, it doesn't. But I'm going to go back because, believe it or not, I knew time with you was going to go quickly. But it really has flown.
Has it?
I'm going to go back and I'm just going to make a couple of little suggestions to you.
Yes, please.
One is, do what we talked about our professional cricketers do and our golfers do. Mm-hmm. And that's brief. Yes. Learn to control your heart rate. What you're going through is a tough process when you're trying to buy a property. Mm-hmm. But there is help out there. Don't be scared to ask. A very good estate agent, a very good property developer will help you. They will guide you through the process. You're going to get calling off periods in all of these situations in whatever you do. So don't worry that, you know, if you're not comfortable, go and have a look at it again.
Yeah.
We'll talk off air and we'll try and get you onto the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
With your pawn
Make
book.
An honest
with,
woman of me, Steve.
With your pawn book. Yeah, doubtful. Not with your pawn book.
With your pawn book,
you're going to be worth lots of money. You're going to have to go out with a scarf over your head because people are going to be chasing you all over the place.
Yeah, and pirate costumes, great.
That's going to look really interesting walking through Shoreditch in a pirate's costume. Daisy May, I've really enjoyed having you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been brilliant. I look forward to seeing you. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely.
Good luck with the purchase, as and when you find something.
Well, you'll be the first one to come round.
Absolutely.
Put on the cricket and open some beers.
Perfect. It's a great day. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Viewers, listeners, first-time buyers, you're probably going to relate to lots of these stories. If we've offended anyone... Tough.
Sorry, Paul.
Look forward to seeing you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.